The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hi, this is Dana Stevens, Slate's movie critic, and I'm here with a Slate spoiler special podcast on State of Play, the new journalistic political thriller. With me from our Washington bureau is Dan Coyce. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how are you?
Can you identify yourself since I don't even know what you are these days?
Well, sure. I'm a contributing writer for New York Magazine and Vulture, and I'm a movie reviewer for The Washington Post.
And also as a new D.C. transplant, you're the perfect companion for this spoiler because you can talk about some of the D.C. location stuff in this political
right.
thriller.
With roughly the same level of knowledge of D.C. as the filmmakers.
Right. But perhaps even a better sense of what you can tell me what your D.C. location choices would have been. So as usual, I'm going to lazily throw the plot summary over to you, which with this movie is particularly burdensome. Because the plot is really, really convoluted and increasingly silly as the movie goes on.
It's set in Washington, D.C., and it follows a hard-bitten Washington Globe reporter, Cal McCaffrey, who's played by Russell Crowe, as he follows a increasingly convoluted political scandal and murderous plot. It leads off with a double murder on the streets of Georgetown as a kid and a pizza delivery man are murdered by an unknown assassin. Cal is covering the case for the Globe, and he's sort of your traditional hard-bitten reporter who knows everyone and knows everything and has sources everywhere. And the murder quickly becomes linked to Cal's college roommate and close friend, Stephen Collins, who's played by Ben Affleck. He's a congressman from Pennsylvania. The kid who was murdered has the phone number of Collins's former aide, Sonia, in his cell phone. And by coincidence or not by coincidence, Sonia also died that exact same morning, stepping out or being pushed out in front of a metro train in a metro station. As the plot goes on, we follow Cal and another reporter at the paper, Della Fry, who's the paper's Washington blogger.
Played by Rachel McAdams.
Played by Rachel McAdams. As they unravel the case and discover that it's all tied up with Blackwater-like private security firm that is manipulating congressional hearings.
Oh, you forgot to mention that Ben Affleck's character, the congressman, was actually having an affair with the aide
who
was killed. Right. So it also becomes a sex scandal.
So you can see that really within 25 minutes, it becomes almost ridiculously complicated. And then within an hour, it becomes completely ridiculously complicated as it's revealed, first of all, that, yes, Ben Affleck was having an affair with the aide. Then it's revealed that Ben Affleck's wife, played by Robin Wright, was having an affair with Russell Crowe at one point. They were all very close from college, and they...
Is she still Robin Wright Penn, or did she stop being Robin Wright Penn?
I guess she's Robin Wright Penn. Even the actors' names are too complicated in this movie. And to spoil the ending, as this is a spoiler special, we can here exclusively reveal that in the silliest plot twist of all, it turns out that the deaths at the center of this, in fact, have nothing to do with the private security company, but in fact were all tied to Affleck in the end as a unhinged former military comrade of his who he hired to keep an eye on Sonia, the staffer who he was having an affair with because he didn't trust her, sort of went off the rails, killed her, killed some other people, try to kill Russell Crowe, and eventually is shot down by cops.
Which, as you point out, is a very disappointing ending because it closes down the drama back down to this sort of banal love story and the story of a guy having his girl followed. Basically, he just gets her followed by the wrong person. He gets her followed by an old military buddy who happens to go off the rails and decide to kill her. But all of this more interesting, juicy political stuff that comes out in the middle about, you know, the idea of the privatization of national security, basically, about the idea that... Can you summarize this for me? Because it's too complicated for me, too. The idea that some huge Blackwater-like firm is essentially trying to insource all security for the United States.
Right. That things like, you know, domestic wiretapping and things like that are going to be auctioned off to bidders, to private corporations to bid as opposed to being run out of the government, and that one company is actually creating shell corporations to more or less control all domestic surveillance and all sort of domestic issues of national security.
I mean, even though that seems like a completely feverish kind of conspiracy theory type event that could never actually happen, still the sort of anxieties that it addresses are the most interesting part of the movie, all of which get dropped at the end.
Right. And in like the world of the movie, they're like vaguely plausible as opposed to the completely implausible, like personal gymnastics that everyone has to be doing to make this movie work. Like, it's totally implausible that Russell Crowe and Ben Affleck and Robin Wright Penn would have all gone to college together and ended up the places that they ended up and are having affairs with each other. But it's kind of plausible that maybe the government would auction off domestic security to a corporation. I mean, why not? It could happen. But then, as you know, that is completely dropped at the end, and it just becomes that Ben Affleck is a crappy boyfriend and he just hires a jerk to follow his girlfriend and that he ends up killing her.
So let's take a break now at the end of that utterly confusing plot summary that has everyone just, wah, and have a word from our sponsor. And then I want to come back and talk about some of the stuff that we liked about the movie, mainly including some of the performances.
Sure.
So let's pause there for a word from our sponsor, Audible.com, which is the leading purveyor of spoken audio entertainment on the web, i.e. a really great archive of audiobooks. If you go to www.audiblepodcast.com/spoiler, not slash slate, as I mentioned in the last podcast, but we actually have our own landing page now, so /spoiler. You can sign up for a great deal with Audible where you get a free audiobook in exchange for a two-week trial. And if you decide not to use your membership and drop the trial, then you can still keep your book. So our recommendation for this week is All the President's Men, which is available on audiblepodcast.com, narrated by Richard Poe, written, of course, by Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward. And I chose that as a recommendation, Dan, also because that movie and, you know, the story in general of the Watergate investigation is referenced all over this movie, despite the fact that, you know, the two scandals have almost nothing in common. Essentially, they're just sort of trying to get some cred by, you know, borrowing some Watergate-related imagery. Do you remember some of those moments? My favorite one is a moment that echoes the very famous shot in All the President's Men, the film, where the camera pulls up very high as Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein are investigating in the Library of Congress. Do you remember that shot?
Right.
And
right. You
sort of see the patterns on the floor and you see other people researching and you start to get kind of a sense of the scope of the investigation, even as you sort of get a bigger sense of the scope of the library they're in. And anyway, there's a moment when Russell Crowe is talking to Jeff Daniels, who plays a crooked senator, I believe, right? I don't know if he's a congressman or a senator.
He's a senator. He's the majority whip. He's a congressman. He's the majority whip.
And the camera pull. They're standing at the mosaic tile floor of the outside of the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, and the camera pulls up in that same way. But there were some other All the President's Men kind of references.
Well, I mean, there's actual scenes at the Watergate. There's a scene of them walking through offices in the Watergate. There are parking garages.
Oh, that's right. The Watergate building itself figures prominently,
right.
And they're even joking about the fact that somebody, one of the people under investigation, has offices in the Watergate building.
Right.
Oh, there was one D.C. location that you, as a new D.C. resident, wanted to reference. You said that everyone in the D.C. screening cracked up when they showed this particular place.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it is, as far as D.C. movies go, it's less embarrassing than most, and it does use some good locations. I mean, it makes good use of some parts of the city that you don't usually see in other movies. It doesn't all happen in the corridors of power. There's a nice scene at Ben's Chili Bowl, which is a beloved DC restaurant institution. But the scene that got a big laugh here, and anyone who lives in DC will crack up as soon as they see it, is the Americana Motel, which is a big and very, very ugly motel right off Route 50 in Virginia as you cross the bridge from the city by the memorials into the Virginia suburbs. It's this motel that everyone who's ever commuted into the city has driven past 10 million times, but you've never stayed there and you don't know anyone else who's ever stayed there. And it just looks shady as hell. But a series of dramatic scenes toward the end of this movie occur in that motel. And when it appeared on screen at the DC screening I went to, everyone cracked up.
So it's an insider's joke, but it worked for that one crowd. But I mean,
it
works for everyone in terms of being a really well chosen, seedy looking motel and a very funny place for them to take Jason Bateman's character. Let's talk about what happens at the Americana Motel.
Jason Bateman plays Dominic Foy, a skeezy PR guy in Washington. Believe it or not, Washington has skeezy PR guys like every other city, and sort of a Eurotrashy party hound who was friends with Sonia, the aide who was killed and who it turns out eventually was hired to get her onto Stephen Collins' staff, onto Ben Affleck's staff. It turns out that she was a spy for this Blackwater-type firm.
Point Core. Aren't they called Point Core?
Core,
which
yes,
is a great
Point
sort
Core.
Of generic, scary corporate name.
Right. In one of the many convolutions of plot, it turns out that she at first was betraying Ben Affleck by sending secrets from his committee back to Point Core, but then later she fell in love with him and, in fact, became pregnant with his baby before she was killed. But this is all revealed via a hilarious scene, a set of scenes with Jason Bateman as a slimy PR guy who's chugging liquor and popping downers in an attempt to keep himself calm as he's taken to this slummy, cruddy Americana hotel in the Virginia suburbs, the ugliest place he's ever been. He demands compensation from the reporters from Russell Crowe and Rachel McAdams.
But they're too ethical for that. They'll just threaten him and beat him up instead.
Right. Russell Crowe, he won't give him money because you can't do that, but he will threaten his health, threaten to unveil him to Point Core via their article, and then illegally and immorally and unethically tape everything that he says without his knowledge. But Jason Bateman is great in this movie. And in fact, a lot of the supporting players are fantastic in this movie. Jason Bateman is great and steals every scene that he's in. Jeff Daniels as the senator who's sort of behind a lot of the machinations of this Blackwater-type company is very funny and interesting, and you sort of wish there was a little more of him in the movie. And then, there are actors like buried in this movie way, way deep, like poor Viola Davis. Oscar nominee Viola Davis has a three-line scene as a woman working in the autopsy room.
Yeah, when I saw her name in the credits at the end, I had to rack my brains to remember when Viola Davis was in it. But I'm sure she was cast in the role before all the Oscar buzz about her last role.
Right. And
I was
a little bit
disappointed, I have to say. I'm sorry, go ahead, Dan. What?
Oh, no, I was just going to say I'm sure that this movie is going to pay for her kids' college as opposed to the small movies that she would have otherwise gotten.
Right. So I just wanted to say I was maybe a little bit disappointed in Helen Mirren, not in her performance itself. She's great, but in the role that was written for her. I was just, when you go see a movie with Helen Mirren, of course, you're looking forward to lots of juicy Helen Mirren moments. And I felt like she was sort of plugged in, as the ball-busting, hard-ass editor of the Washington Globe, the kind of Ben Bradley of the movie, and didn't really get any chance to explore. Her character had zero conflict, zero ambiguity, and, had some funny lines, but essentially sort of just functioned as the mean boss.
Right. I mean, she was basically there to be J. Jonah Jameson. I mean, she was not meant to be a character so much as she was meant to be the...
Is that the Spider-Man editor's name?
Right, yeah.
You would know that.
But, I mean, she was playing a British J. Jonah Jameson. She's just there to yell at people and tell them that she cannot hold this deadline any longer. And then they say, hold the deadline. And then you see her exasperated. I mean, that was the entire thing.
Speaking of casting, we were also going to touch on the actors formerly cast in the main two roles. I was just reading about some casting problems this movie had. It kept falling apart, and they would have to find new actors. And initially, the first talent to sign on to the script was Brad Pitt, who was going to play the Russell Crowe role, and Ed Norton was going to play the Ben Affleck role of the Politico. And the movie would have been so profoundly different, and I think worse with those actors. What do you think?
Well, it was based on a very beloved and pretty great 6-hour British miniseries, which was directed, if I recall, by David Yates, who later ended up directing two of the Harry Potter movies, the last one and this next one. And it's a wonderful miniseries and very tense and exciting, and boiled down to this 2 hours is obviously not going to be quite as great. But yeah, the original people who were associated with it were Pitt and Norton. And Edward Norton potentially would have been a great step up from Ben Affleck in playing the congressman as something other than a wounded meathead. But the idea of Brad Pitt as like a seasoned, dyed-in-the-wool Washingtonian who covers his beat and, hangs out at Ben's Chili Bowl and is friends with the cops is honestly hilarious. Like, all I can imagine is Brad Pitt as his character from Burn After Reading, the other Washington movie he ended up instead, like running around drinking Jamba Juice and trying to get people to talk to him. And it just makes me laugh and laugh.
Yeah, absolutely. Because Brad Pitt is so much better at pretending to not be very smart. I'm sure he is a smart guy, but he doesn't play smart very well. And I think Russell Crowe actually was pretty great in this role.
Russell Crowe starts out great in this role. And as the movie goes on,
the role makes no sense. I mean, nobody could be great in it.
But he makes you realize what a good actor he is because he sells even the most unsaleable of moments. I mean, really, really well. He's fantastic in this. And he's a believable reporter, and in plenty of guys from Australia can't even be believable Americans.
So last thing to touch on, the question of journalistic ethics is probably too big to even get into here. It's just, is there a single thing that the reporters do in this movie that any reporter could legally be allowed to do? And would their scoops even be publishable with the way that they treated their sources?
I mean, no, of course not. But it was a movie. There's a fun piece in the Washington Post that people should try and find in last Sunday's post by a Post Metro reporter who ended up being like the journalism advisor on this movie. And I think that he thought that he was going to have a great effect on the script in terms of telling them, I'm sorry, you cannot do this. A reporter would never do this. But it turns out that he really didn't have that much effect on them. When they do things like record people illegally, and he would say, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. They just did it anyway. But instead, what he ended up doing, according to the story, was they would call him in the middle of the night and say, what do journalists wear? And he would say, well, right now, you know, I'm wearing a suit, a rumpled suit. And they'd be like, great. And then they'd run off and recreate the rumpled suit. And
start Russell Crowe, start rumpling, people.
Right. And so Russell Crowe would be like, what kind of notebook do you use? And so you can see in the movie, Russell Crowe has very authentic reporter's notebooks strewn all over his like 1990 Saab.
It is quite endearing, actually, though, that he sort of stands for the old world newspaper that's dying out, and that Della Fry, the McAdams character, is the blogger, you know. And there are a couple moments, some sort of nods at the death of the printed newspaper and the sort of throes of the newspaper industry that I found kind of touching.
But this movie is really, it's not meant to be an elegy. It's meant to be fighting, it's raging against the dying of the light. I mean, the Rachel McAdams arc, if you want to call it that, that she plays a blogger, Della Fry, who through researching the story with Russell Crowe learns that blogging isn't everything, and sometimes a real newspaper story is what it really takes to make a journalist out of you. And she actually has this sad, sad line at the end that just made our entire theater wince when they're talking, they're reminiscing about the great story that they're uncovering, and she says, you know, a story this big, people ought to have newsprint on their hands when they read it.
So the audience of mainly, I would imagine, D.C. journalists that you saw the movie with were touched by that, or were they hooting?
No, I think that even D.C. journalists at this point are too cynical to believe that our own industry has a future.
Well, and I found very elegiac the closing titles of the movie, which you said also got laughs at your screening, but they essentially show the big scoop that they've spent the entire movie working on, which turns out to be this really disappointing headline of what, congressman
arrested. Right, in his role in four murders,
with the huge Blackwater scoop, I assume buried right on page like D8 or something like that. So we see that headline going to press from top to bottom. We basically see like the negatives being put on some sort of a microfilm machine and then magnified and sent into the giant presses. And I sort of thrilled to see the production of an old world newspaper.
Right. Well, as a guy whose grandfather used to set type, I mean, my grandfather was a typesetter for the Milwaukee Journal, and that's a job that doesn't even exist anymore. And so to see them shooting negatives and feeding those negatives into the presses and stuff was really interesting. But the headline that they're printing, as you note, is totally depressing, because I would imagine that in the real world of journalism, and in fact probably in this movie, the Blackwater stuff is not even going to make it into the story, because that stuff came from an anonymous source. They're not going to be able to back it up. They would be very, very, very easy to sue them on that basis, because they would not be able to back that up at all with their anonymous source, who they cannot reveal and would not reveal. And so they would be left wide open to legal action from Point Core. And since it's not germane to this story as it ends up, because it turns out that this woman died because Ben Affleck was a jerk, not because of her connection to national security issues, that's never going to make it into the story. And so this big scoop is just sort of a sordid, in the end, sex scandal, the sordid sex scandal that everyone thought it might be at the beginning, as opposed to some big, exciting, world-changing, national security-threatening issue of the sort that reporters really want to get into.
Oh, we suck, Dan. Our profession is in sad, sad shape.
But you know what? We wear rumpled suits really well. I'm wearing one right now.
All right, Dan, thanks a lot for coming to join me on this Slate Spoiler Special podcast.
My pleasure.
For Slate.com, I'm Dana Stevens.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.